welcome back to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker, and today I am talking to Mark Francis. He is the founder and creative director of Heron's Gill, a cosmopolitan tailoring brand based in London. The brand approaches each collection with an openness to the world. It takes the city's rich heritage in tailoring as a starting point and has luxurious natural fabrics fused with the British craftsmanship to produce clothing and accessories characterized by their hybridity, superlative quality, and relaxed elegance. And heronsgill.com is the place you can go. We'll leave the links over at menswearstyle.com. But now, to talk about the brand in his own words, is Mark Francis from Heron's Gill.
So I would describe Heron's Gill as a men's tailoring brand, but like with tailoring seen through a fashion lens. I think fashion has perhaps like mixed connotations, but the aspects I'm referring to are critical thinking. So where I think tailoring might defer to like very established forms, I think fashion is interesting in rethinking some of these like long-held tenets. Another aspect is like reinvention. So where I think, you know, there's this idea of like a classic menswear like format, fashion really like looks to reinvent itself like every year, every season, and another one being like, you know, a more liberal approach to dressing versus being extremely rules bound. So where I think traditional quote-unquote tailoring might be focused on like whether or not an upturned cuff can be worn with, you know, like pleated trousers, for example, I think they're like fashion is slightly more personal and slightly more individual. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean by like scrutinizing like this very established format of tailoring through a more fashion lens. And why tailoring? I think I've always just been drawn to formality and complexity. And I think the tailoring form lends itself to the expression of very high quality material. So, you know, the juxtaposition of like a beautiful button with like interesting fabrics. And the brand itself, like, because I mean, it is a brand that like houses like product within it. I think the brand itself is rooted in a cosmopolitan ethos, and cosmopolitanism is like a quality that I've valorized for as long as I remember. And the archetype in my head of like what a cosmopolitan is this idea of a man who is like broadly cultured, someone that's at ease anywhere in the world, someone that's able to put like someone and like other people at ease, someone that's interested in international affairs, because I think the world is fundamentally very interesting, and to limit myself to a very like narrow geography would just be, I don't know, like slightly limiting. So we start with a stand collar suit to establish a beachhead in menswear, because I think the majority of menswear is quite competitive and there are lots of new brands. So we really wanted to dominate something that we saw that was more of a blue ocean. So like high quality stand collars, and then expand from there.
Okay. And just take me back a little. So what is your background coming into the brand?
My background, I was born in Malaysia, but of like Chinese and Sri Lankan extraction. So again, this idea of hybridity and cosmopolitanism comes into play. I went to school in the US in a private liberal arts college. And then I was also educated in France, did an MBA in France. But professionally, I like had, you know, a very corporate background. Mm-hmm. So I worked in investment banking, corporate strategy, and then I worked at Farfetch, if you know it. It's a luxury fashion retailer.
Yep, sure.
Yeah. And also along the way worked in like software development, well, web development, and was briefly like CEO of a venture-backed fashion startup. So I think like the idea here, like it sounds like slightly scattered, but I think the idea was always that I was going to be like, I was always going to have my own brand. So I was like trying to acquire like pre-MBA a very broad-based skill set, like and then the idea being that after like the MBA I would acquire functional knowledge within the industry of my choosing, which is fashion and apparel.
Interesting. And I often ask the founders of people that come on the show, like what are their main influences behind the designs of their garments or their products? And I think you've perhaps touched upon it there, being, you know, a cosmopolitan person and kind of, I guess, cherry picking different things that you may have seen along the way.
Yeah.
With different influences. Perhaps we can just drill down on that. Is there something in your personal style or maybe from the iconography of your youth that you hang on to and that's being implemented in these designs?
Sure. So I think aesthetically, I would describe my aesthetic as shabby intellectualism meets like weathered, like majesty. I don't draw from like overt references. I think my sensibility is definitely like shaped by a lot, a very diverse range of experiences, but three major like influences would be, first of all, obviously growing up in Malaysia. Now, the history of Malaysia is relatively recent. I would struggle to suggest that we have I think what I take from my Malaysian upbringing is really like an appreciation of like natural fabrics because of the weather, like, you know, being as hot as it is and as humid as it is, like polyester just does not feel comfortable to wear. And I speak from personal experience. Right. Also, an appreciation of like really vibrant colors. Partly it's again, nature, like, you know, tropical flowers, but also like, as I mentioned, like, you know, Chinese, Indian, like these just very colorful, like cultures that like exist in Malaysia. I think, you know, things like side splits I've always been a fan of, which is, I suppose, a design feature that it might be seen on a Tang jacket, for example. Gold, like hardware, again, like auspicious in Chinese culture. So that's the Malaysian aspect. I think another one would be my American liberal arts, like education, and especially like the culture around like elite American colleges, like, with that, I think I've inherited a love of like slouchiness and bagginess and ease, like befitting, like in the tradition or in the legacy of like American sportswear. Yeah. And then I'm also very like interested in the 1980s in general. There was like an individualism, like a hopefulness and a confidence that like pervaded during that era. And specifically, a lot of the references I make to the 1980s like are rooted in British music, specifically like yacht rock, like Prefab Sprout, Blue Nile, and also British subculture from that like era. So like classic goth, aka like slash post-punk, and maybe even the new romantic. So it's a real like mishmash of different influences. But I think there's an element of dandyism, an element of like a countercultural spirit, but also like opulence and a love of opulence. And that's how it's sort of like fashioned this brand.
Yeah. And touching upon what you mentioned about the weather in Malaysia, I guess that's where you lean into the seersucker and the linen, which is apparent in your collection. And I guess also in America as well, where certain parts will be hotter than most. Does that lend itself to, say, the British climate, where it's pretty cold as balls, maybe 9 months of the year?
I think the thing is, British weather is never extreme, right? So it's never extremely hot and it's never extremely cold. So I feel like linen is actually very appropriate for more months of the year, because I think even in Malaysia, like a linen suit is a bit of a tough like thing to wear, like in 30, like 6 degree humidity. Where else, like an English summer, like, you know, it doesn't get any better than linen, like layered linens. And even all the way from like, I don't know, like late spring to like early spring to late fall in the UK, I think, linen's great. So,
Well, I mean, I've got a bunch of different linen jackets. I just find even though it's not always conducive to the British climate, if you are someone that's traveling a fair bit to Europe, which is like only a 2-hour plane ride, and you could be in Tuscany, right? I mean, you still look good, and those sort of jackets and those fabrics will lend itself way more to those kind of climates, and it's not a million miles away. I'm interested, Mark, about how, if you're not, I don't think you're technically like
educated in fashion, for example, going to fashion colleges. How do you get the ideas out of your head, especially with the designs? Have you picked up drawing skills along the way? How do you execute the ideas from your head onto paper effectively?
Yeah, I mean, I've always drawn. And also I think garment making, I think a lot of the fashion designers I have admired through history haven't gone to fashion school. I think the idea of a fashion school is a relatively recent phenomenon. I think how did I pick up the skills to design clothes? I think I've always had an interest in it. So I started with what I would do with any new subject, which is to take my existing clothes apart to figure out how patterns worked. Mm. And then just also finding a mentor. And in my case, it's in the form of Nikki, who is my main pattern cutter. So as a team, we deconstruct garments and reconstruct them. And it's really trial and error. I've spent the past 3 years primarily focused on product development, which means that I think I have achieved a certain level of expertise in garment engineering. What was the question again?
No, that's kind of nailed on. Basically trying to understand how you get the ideas from your paper.
Sorry,
And then to kind of flesh it out into a visual,
sure,
a product.
Yeah. So I think, I do draw, I do sketch, but I think with menswear especially, I think menswear operates with more subtlety, right? So it's really in terms of, we talked about linen before, a linen jacket. Linen's one of my favorite fabrics because it has natural structure but also drape and it's soft. And so I think linen with a lining is slightly ruined. So I wanted an unlined linen jacket, but I didn't want, but when you unline a jacket, you tend to have facings that just sort of flap on the inside, right? Which you can bind with bias tape, for example, to neaten it up. But I wanted something that was just unflappable, and just very clean on the inside, so no flapping seams. So the Pegu jacket, which is made in linen, for example, is the outcome of this design problem. And so what I did was extend the facings into the side seams and use lapped seams on all over the garment, so everything's basically sewn flat down. And that's sort of the genre of what it means to design menswear. I think you can go big. I think the biggest thing you could do is perhaps, especially when you talk about the tailoring form, is perhaps change the color, because I think that really radically reconstructs the garment. But for the other aspects, I think it's just trying to understand what you want and trying to figure out a solution. And I think the internet is a very helpful resource in understanding what sort of possibilities there are in terms of seams or finishes. Another thing is just testing, right? There's no better way to learn fashion than to test certain fusings or canvasings with the fabric. I think you can't design your way into that.
Yeah. And was it something that you picked up relatively quickly, taking your clothes apart and then putting them together and kind of reconstructing everything? Do you feel like you had a natural talent at that?
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host, Matt Heslin, brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
I mean, it took me 3 years. So I think it's only, I started, I mean, I started with like getting my usual tailor to try and make me a Mandarin suit. I don't know, in like 2017, so however many years ago, 6 years ago. Mm. And that I was just not happy with the outcome, because I think when you have someone who's like trained in a certain like tradition, getting them to depart from that that's when I knew that there was something more to like just the collar that I was trying to articulate, right? So it's like drape and construction and like taking out the guts of a typical tailored jacket and like reconstituting that in like softer I don't know, like interfacings, for example, or just removing the interfacing and like relying on seam. But yeah, it's like I think I properly started like, you know, sampling like consistently since like at the start of 2020. And it's really like, I mean, I can't tell you how many rounds of samples we've gone through, like, but it's only like really this year, like especially to like recently, that I feel like I've hit my stride and I've nailed it. Like where once it would have taken like 4 samples to get like a product to market, these days it's like, you know, 1-2 at most.
That's interesting. Yeah, I want to get onto the stand-up collar tailoring in a second, but I can just imagine in the film of your life, Mark, there'll be a moment where your better half will come home and find all of his suits kind of ripped apart on the floor, and you trying to
reconstitute,
get it all together before he gets home. Like, and then when it's all done together, it's like, oh, you like narrow jackets, right? All of your jackets are now conveniently stand-up colors. You're welcome.
No, I mean, the thing is, like, the only point I want to make about that is that, like, I think it's the only thing I've looked at. It's not the only thing, but it's the primary thing I've looked at for the past 3 years. And I think I've reached a point where I'm like, I've taken this as far as I want to take it for now. Mm. And so next year, like a sneak preview, I'm the one thing that's interesting to me at the moment is like the idea of like a low gorge lapel. So that is something that I think I have a like double breasted overcoat on the website that has a relatively lowish gorge, but I'm really trying to like drop that even further. So that's what's to come next year.
Interesting. Well, I mean, I associate the low gorge lapel with a lot of 80s styling and early 80s deconstructed suits. Exactly. I mean, you touched upon your 80s heritage earlier on. So do you, and I say this to people all the time, I feel like they're like tailoring is quite cyclical. So you'll have you'll have a very kind of touch to fit suit, quite baggy, but you know, very comfortable fitting suits, like I guess early 2000s, and then gradually it kind of comes in, gets very tight. Yeah. Imagine, I guess, Daniel Craig Spectre 2015, and you think, well, it can't get any more tighter than that, so it has to go back the other way. The mm-hmm. waistband has to come higher. The lapels have to go wider. So are we now, do you think, kind of coming to the end of? Well, not the end, but maybe a rebirth of the low gorge lapel. Do you think like that these are just around the corner, or is it something that you're just very interested in trying?
I honestly have no idea. Like, I think, like, I would like I don't have the ability to predict trends, and I'm also just not interested in going down that route, I think. But I do like, it's just something I'm interested in trying. I think maybe you're right. Like, I mean, as you said, like fashion, life, everything is cyclical, right? So we have like pretty much peaked on like skinny. And I think like the overly high gorge to me just looks a bit awkward, like a push-up bra. So I think I just want to like start. And I think like a low gorge like ties with like a looser like silhouette for like a, yeah. So I think like, if the industry is headed towards the looser silhouette, which I think I've been seeing a lot of, but I don't know if it's reached its peak yet. I think we're still on the, like, we haven't reached the crest, but like we are on the cusp of a trend, I suppose. Mm. But at the same time, like the feedback I get is that people are still like certain segments of my customer are still quite tied or tethered to a slimmer leg, right? So I don't know, like maybe it's a 2-year, 3-year thing, like before we start seeing this manifest in tailoring, maybe it's sooner.
Yeah, it's interesting. You can't, well, you have to have enough distance from it so it doesn't look dated, but then it can't be too on the nose with it that it looks anachronistic, right? Like you're trying to do something, you know, entirely derivative. So I'll be interested in seeing what you come up with. I guess, well, that leads us on. What are you up to for the new year, the 2024? Have we got any plans to do any bricks and mortar, any pop-ups, showcases?
The long-term plan would definitely be to have bricks and mortar, but I think for the moment, this is only our like first full year of trading, so I think we are just taking things slow. I think next year it's probably going to be more of the same, but like with, you know, like just building out the range a lot more. As I said, like I think we have dominated this niche of stand collar luxury tailoring, and I think it's time to extend that, like using, you know, certain blocks that we are fairly comfortable with, and developing like you know, a range of different collars that might pair nicely with these blocks. And then you're right, like I think in general, I think we've also reached peak digital fatigue, and I think there is an interest in like reconnecting physically. So while we may not be in a position to like go down the bricks and mortar, like permanent bricks and mortar route, I think trunk shows are definitely on the cards. Like we had our first one like a couple of weeks ago, and that was quite an interesting and like a very like compelling experience. So I think that's definitely something we're going to pursue next year. Also, just like as I said earlier, we have not done enough like engagement with the industry or like externally. And that's all like quite fundamental to brand building. So I think our initial customer was really like somebody that was looking for something very specific, like beige linen Nehru suit. And that's great. Like, and I'm very grateful for this like early adopter customer. But I think, you know, in terms of expansion, there's definitely a lot more that can be done in terms of like getting the word out, speaking to people, honing my like, you know, my spiel. And I think I'll be going to Pitti in January. If anybody's there, like very happy to connect. But yeah, that's it. I think it's very hard to like look too far into the future, but that's what I have planned so far.
Fantastic. Well, Mark, it's been wonderful talking to you and getting to know you and getting to know the brand. I recommend everybody check the brand out at heronsgill.com. Yes. Gill is GHYLL, I believe.
Exactly.
And we'll put all the links on the show notes as well, so you can just scroll down in the notes here and on the website menswearstyle.co.uk. We'll put them up there. And hang out on the Instagram. I'm going to give you a follow now because I've just found you. It's herons.gill.
Yes, exactly.
Hitting the follow button. The imagery is strong. Looks exotic. Wow, looks like. So yeah, do you do all this yourself in terms of the imagery?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, listen, a really interesting place to hang out as well. It's not just clothes, it's architecture, it's furniture.
Yes.
It's poetry.
Exactly.
From Christian Morgenstern, the bio, where home is not where you live, but where they understand you.
Exactly.
German poet. Okay. Yeah. That's a good note to go out on, I think. Mark, thanks so much for your time and best of luck, mate. And
thanks very much. Thank you. Okay. Bye.
You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you would like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.